This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello and welcome to the Two Robbies podcast, your destination for in-depth discussion and analysis of the Premier League and the Champions League. I'm Robbie Musto, he's Robbie Earle, and here are today's topics. Manchester City stay top of the table, but not without controversy. Chelsea look like they're about to drop 2 points until a late questionable penalty. Steven Gerrard's Villa falls to Liverpool on his Anfield return, but did they deserve more? Man United remain unbeaten under Ralf Rangnick as Ronaldo nets another winner. And Arsenal in flying form against Southampton despite Arteta dropping Aubameyang. That's what we've got coming up in today's episode. All right, Robbie Earle, let's start with Manchester City.
Your new Christmas present. It's come early, 12th of December. I've paid out for the set.
Very posh.
I just felt as though we needed to go to next level.
Upgrade.
Podcast. Upgrade podcast.
Pretty good,
okay.
Isn't it?
Okay.
Yeah, lovely.
No bows on it, but... It's
and we're a little bit closer together than what we have been, so...
A little kiss over to you.
Perfect. All right, so, okay.
Yeah,
new surroundings was great. Okay, the football. Manchester City 1, Wolverhampton Wanderers 0. I just want to quickly talk about Man City's shape, because it was different for this game. Mm-hmm. I think everybody knows how Wolves play, with the three at the back, and Pep sometimes chucks in something a little different. Yeah. So this was more like a 4-4-2 and a diamond. Jesus and Sterling were the kind of the wider, the split strikers, and Grealish played as a number 10. I mean, that's not the biggest part of this game, but it was interesting. It did something a little different. And I would have to say, didn't really think it worked particularly well. City weren't at their best, but as we always say, the most important thing was the result.
Yeah, let me just go back to you on that. And I'm not necessarily making the criticism of Pep, but in those situations where, you know, you change that system, and whether I assume it's to get the best out of players and things, maybe it's against the opposition, but in days like that when it's not working, is there a point where you almost go, I've tried it, it's not worked, 20 minutes, let's go back to what we were? Mm. Or... do you think there's a perseverance? Well, they're not doing it well enough, so I need to stay. And I'm not saying just always overthinking, but can there be a way where a coach can go too far? Kind of always trying to manipulate, to change, to move, to do it different?
Well, Pep's can be a little stubborn, can't he, with this stuff? Mm. You know, we saw the Champions League final was the biggest example of doing something totally different that didn't work out. Yeah. To be fair, I think the second half he changed it a little bit.
He did. Yeah.
I think the wingers went back to being wide players, and it went back to a similar shape, the 4-3-3 that we've seen before. I mean, it's just something he does. It keeps players on their toes. Yeah. It keeps other coaches that looks at his team.
I mean, it's just one of the things. Do you think, and we talked about it on the broadcast, we talked about Jack Grealish, bought for $139 million, a player that Pep supposedly wanted for a long time. We both believe he's a top-class player. He will bring something to Manchester City. Finding his best position might be part of the issue, whether we thought it was that left-hand side that he plays at Villa, or I know you particularly like him as a central, possibly false nine. Where are we with Jack Grealish now, 16 games into a Premier League season, had a couple of opportunities, had half opportunity, certainly with his left foot, got substituted for Kevin De Bruyne. Does Pep persevere with Jack? If so, where?
I think we're getting to a point where he's going to leave him out the side. Of course, the left side front position is where he started in, where Jack knows all about from Villa and probably is his best position. Certainly was for Villa, in my opinion. Gave him a lot of reps there, games there. Yeah. He's tried him as a nine, the false nine, to be closer to the goal, I'd think, to get better numbers. Mm. When you've got a situation where I think it's 15 or 16 games played, he, of all the attackers... of all the midfield players, is is bottom of the scoring charts. Fernandinho's got the same amount, one Premier League goal. Yeah. All the others, Gundogan, Kevin De Bruyne has not played many games. Bernardo Silva, of course. Mm, you know, even still, Rodri's got a couple of goals. Jesus, everybody's got more goals. Now, we've seen this before from different players, take a little bit of time to settle in.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure Pep's going to keep trying him. I think he'll be out the side and others will play for a little bit, because it's getting to a point now where, you know, you're turning down other players that are in good form.
Yeah.
So Jack Grealish plays. What do you think?
I kind of agree, although I still think Pep will persevere. I don't think you spend that amount of money on a player to sort of give it up after.
Has he been influenced before, though, on transfer fees? I don't think it bothers him who he leaves out.
No, it doesn't really bother. I don't think he bothers about the number, but I just think he was a player that he wanted. He's a player he liked. I think he would look on himself as maybe it hasn't worked. I also pointed, and I said at the weekend, look how Gundogan has been at the football club 5 years. Last year was his big breakout, 13 Premier goals and winning the title. Bernardo Silva's been at the football club 4 years. This season's becoming his big, you know, seven Premier League goals and dominate games. Maybe with Pep, it takes a season or two to kind of understand it, to be more comfortable, to get where you want to be. And I think that might be part of Jack, although he's got the ability and the football intelligence, I think, to play that role. What I thought was interesting, though, in the bigger picture about the game, Rob, is, and I wanted to throw this one out there, that I hear some people, and you pick a few things up, like, oh, City, it's kind of, you know, same old, and they got the win, wasn't quite the scintillating football. And I kind of think that's a bit of a harsh criticism, because I think people forget, people get sort of, romantic looking back at, like, the Manchester United, the Alex Ferguson era. And everybody thinks they played brilliant every week and won 4-0. I can tell you that we've played Man United a number of times where it was a real tight old game. They beat us 1 or 2-0 in the end. Mm. So their quality showed out. Mm. I don't think Manchester City are ever allowed to do that. Maybe because of the way they play, maybe because of the manager.
Don't you think they get the credit they deserve dominance and their consistency?
I think people will go, oh, you know, City won, didn't play that well, weren't great, but 1-0. Hold on. Man United made a habit of that and winning all the titles under Fergie doing the same. Mm. Why is that? Is that Pep? Is that the money that the football club have? Why do people not appreciate what, you know, digging out a result means as well, that you can win in different ways?
Do you think people are getting... Do you think it's, in some ways, boring watching Man City, Rob? Boring watching them control 80% of possession?
No.
Boring watching them find a way? Well, I think some people do.
Well, you ask me.
So then
they do. Maybe they do. And maybe it's... But isn't... No. Liverpool's probably the wrong example. You could say the same of Chelsea at times when they're methodical. That's a bit same. You know, you have your strategy where you play. I just think at times they get a bad rap, Man City. I think they get a bad rap for what they do. To keep the ball as well as they do, and the possession and the way they move the opposition around,
just
deserves way more credit than they get.
Just get to some incidents, Rob. Raul Jimenez, two yellow cards that really swung the advantage even more to Manchester City. Just a quick line on how crazy was that a experienced international top player gets two yellow cards in the space of a minute, and the second one for, like, standing in front of the ball and sticking his leg out.
I think the hardest thing with this, to be totally frank, Rob, is because of the horrific injury that he sustained, we almost feel like it's a bit awkward to criticise him. And listen, we all are so thankful that he's back playing and he's got protection and all that. Mm. But let's put it into context. If this was Jonjo Shelvey, we'd be going, again, look crazy. Raul Jimenez is an international striker of high repute, technically gifted, knows the rules. Thought was unlucky with the first foul. It was a bit of a thing. I'm not sure that's a yellow. But that given, Rob, once you have the yellow... One, you can't stand you can't stand 2 yards off the ball, raise your foot, and not expect to go. And Bruno Lage said he's had a word with him. I'm pleased he came out and said that. Mm. Because as great as he is, and as much as we think about Raul Jimenez, and as good a player and influential as he's been for Wolves, he deserves criticism, because that could have been a different outcome for Wolves if they had 11 men on the pitch.
The clapping of the fans on the way off was a bit weird and awkward. I don't quite know what that was all about. Mm. An obvious mistake for him. The manager said about it afterwards that... Again, crazy from his experienced player. Other big incident, Rob, talking point, and it's kind of a theme of the weekend that we've talked and we probably talk about, is penalties. And the big clubs, the big boys, particularly at home, another example in this game, got the benefit of the doubt on those. Jean Moutinho went to close down a ball, stuck his arm out away from his body, obviously risky, but I think from the replays that we saw, it kind of hit him in his underarm area. John Moss points to the spot. I think most of them today were this weekend were referees saying, you know what, that's a penalty. I can't imagine that John Moss is absolutely sure, but that's what we saw today. And of course, they see the replays. It's not a penalty. Well, it didn't look like one, but from a slow motion, a blurred image of the ball in and around the underarm, the tricep, I can understand the VAR saying, you know what, it's not a clear and obvious howler of a decision. It's okay. What do you think to that incident?
I didn't think it was a penalty kick. I thought it hit his. I initially thought it hit his back and caught his underarm. The more I saw the evidence on VAR, and there's one great shot where it hits his lat. I think is the phrase. You can almost see daylight between the ball and the arm. So it hits there first, and it bounces up towards the underarm and catches him. And because we got VAR, because John Moss has given the decision, I can't understand how we haven't got that. That's what VAR is there for.
So you thought it was a clear and obvious error.
I thought it was a clear and obvious error. And I understand why it might have been a clear and obvious error, because in first look, it might look like it's his arm. But then we go to VAR and we get a still where you see daylight and you see the initial contact, and I think that should be overruled. And my big issue with a lot of the decisions that happened this weekend was VAR followed the referee, regardless. And VAR's there to check, be a checkpoint for the referees. And I thought Wolves were hard done by. And then 10 men... You know, had to chase the game, looked for maybe Traore to get going. He never quite got the ball. He Chang went on it later on just to try and nick something from the game. In fact, Kilman had a couple of headers at it, didn't he?
City weren't at their best, for sure. They weren't at their best. Champions League week, we know that, and teams struggle sometimes to get up for it. Rotated a load of players. Raheem Sterling, though, took the penalty really well, Rob, and played pretty well.
And I want to talk about him, my friend.
Oh, okay.
Underappreciated performer of the week. I probably think it's the first time we've done it. Raheem Sterling.
Underappreciated, explain.
Underappreciated. One of the few and a very select band of English players who've scored now 100 Premier League goals, Raheem Sterling's one, for Liverpool and Manchester City. For a player who seems to get public criticism, I'm not quite sure why. Media.
Was he out of form a little bit at the start of the season?
Maybe he was out of form. Maybe it fell out with Pep. There was talk that they were going to sell him. Is knuckled down, is producing goods, is scoring goals, was looking dangerous. He was one player we were saying, wasn't he? Every time he gets it looks like something's going to happen during the game, whether he's playing right, whether he's playing centre, whether he's playing left. And obviously, Jack Grealish is another in one of his positions now.
Foden.
I just feel that this guy deserves a lot more credit. There's obviously a steel and a resolve in him. That he wants to prove and show and fight. And I just feel that he's another who gets a bit of a hard rap from the media and the public. But, you know, 100 Premier League goals, let me tell you, is some going. It's some going for a player who's played wide and got plenty of assists. And in a team that's stacked with talent, he continues now. He's almost forced himself back into the first
Year. I think it's a good shout, Rob, because I think there's definitely... there was a sense of a few weeks ago, wasn't getting a look in the side. Now, whether Pep Guardiola deliberately, and this is something that we'll not get into too much now, Rob, but it's really interesting because it seems like Riyad Mahrez will spend 2 or 3 or 4 weeks out the side. Raheem Sterling are 2 or 3 or 4 weeks out the side. John Stones, Laporte... Riyad Mahrez is having this right now. Is this a deliberate rest and rotation policy that Pep brings in and we say, oh, he's out of favour, not playing particularly well, but he's like, there's no problem with it, but they need a little rest. I did a quick, and I'll just try and be real quick, I did a quick scan of minutes played of the top players of the top clubs. And Man City's top players have played less minutes, fewer minutes than a lot of the top boys at the other clubs because of the rotation, because of the rest they're getting. Sterling's had a big rest. Yeah. He's come back with a bang. Is it Mahrez to come back in next time? Is it Jack Grealish's time for a rest? I think that's a really interesting thing that we've got to keep a close eye on. And that, whether he's expertly, with the aid of sports science people, to say, you know what, they're due a 2 or 3 game rest. And then it keeps them absolutely fresh.
Let's move on to Stamford Bridge, where Chelsea got the win. A bit of a bumpy ride. A very eventful game against a Leeds team who is a little bit of ill feeling between the two teams. It came out at the end of the game. But Chelsea got the job done. Conceded two goals. That's, was it, 8 goals in 3 games for them across all competitions, which is very unlike them. Yeah. But they did get the job done. Penalty kicks. You talked about controversy in the Man City ones. How were you with the 3 penalty kicks in this game?
Well, let me talk about the 2 Rudiger ones because they're fresh in my memory. The first sliding tackle into Rudiger
by Rafinha
is a penalty for sure. Mm. What I didn't like, and I think maybe if people watching or listening to this, if you get a chance to go back and look at it, just the reaction from Antonio Rudiger. Now, I'm a big fan of Rudiger, one of the best natural-born defenders in European football right now, and looking for a big move, for big money, he's probably going to get it. A brilliant defender that I've got to say, I'd love to have playing behind me in my team. But the reaction from the challenge that comes in from Rafinha and the rolling around on the ground and his lifting his arm up as if like I've got a problem here, it adds to the, you know, it adds to the reaction of the fans and the referees' expectation, you know, of what's gone on there. But it was, but I just didn't like the reaction on that one. And the winning goal, the penalty that came the winning goal,
was
Matthijs Glick.
Yeah.
I mean, the little bit of contact on the back of the calf is no real force in it. There's no question he could have put his right foot down. I think he did a little bit, by the way, and then went down and could have took that as a challenge from behind. Now, I know I thought the bar had been raised in terms of if it's going to be a foul in the box for a penalty, it's got to be a foul. Yeah. It's got to be a solid foul. That really wasn't when you look at it a few more times. So, again, we always say this when we're doing the shows, Rob.
Yeah.
You can understand why it's been given, but I don't want to say that. Mm. I want to say, nah, not enough contact. But I'm afraid the more we see them, the more we have to say, well, we've seen them given, it probably was.
But if you've seen them given, I'm going to play devil's advocate, and I'm a Chelsea player and he goes down, I'm not going in the dressing room after saying, Antonio, that's not good, mate. I'm saying, well played, you got the 3 points.
Yeah, wow.
Because that's what's happening, and that's the standard of refereeing. It's for the referees to either raise that standard to what we saw early in the season. Because early in the season, I don't think the second Rudiger penalty would have been given. I'm not sure there was enough contact. But because there's contact, we go to VAR, we see this contact, the penalty
is it another
stands.
One with the referee, unless you're sure, 100% don't point
sure.
to the spot. Yeah, yeah. And a lot of these were big teams playing at home in front of the fans that are up for everything. Yeah. And I can't believe that those human referees don't get influenced with a player throwing his arms around. The fans going incredibly high about a decision. Mm. It's kind of easy just to do that. And but what that consequence to that is, a penalty kick, for me, they've got to be really sure. Maybe the referees were, but I thought there's some tough calls this weekend.
I get the sense, looking at the top of the table, and the three teams look like they're still, you know, up there and going to pull away.
Pull away.
Have to look at the goal difference and see that. Mm. I just get the sense right now Chelsea are hanging in there a little bit. Mm. Like, you know, the goals have been conceded. It's not quite, Lukaku started in midweek, you know, didn't now. There's still a bit of finding out with Chelsea, where at the moment, whether playing brilliantly or not, Man City and Liverpool look a bit more grooved in what they're doing, and you can kind of see what they're doing. Chelsea can... I think it'll be a strength of Chelsea if they can hang on in there for the next 2 weeks and get their consistency and their players back who they need.
I hear you, but would you agree that we haven't seen a very good Chelsea for what we'd expect over the last few weeks, and there's still big upside in this team, this squad.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I totally agree with you. And there's a sense right now that, are they really ready to compete at the very top? All I would say is Lukaku doesn't look conditioned, doesn't look fit right now after his fairly lengthy injury outlay. Mason Mount is back. They're still to find a rock-solid 11 for me.
Yeah.
Kovacic has been out. It's probably in that.
Yeah.
But that midfield, if there's going to be two between Jorginho and Golo Kante and him, is tough to get in.
Yeah.
But the front three still isn't cemented for me.
No.
All I'm saying is, if in the second half of the season, Lukaku gets back in, gets some more minutes, starts scoring goals, makes a mount, probably one of those, and somebody else to be a regular creator and scorer, then they're 2 points behind the very top row.
Yeah.
So they're
lots
absolutely
upside,
still in
it,
but there's still upside. And it's just whether they find that or whether we're seeing the start of a plateauing of this team under Thomas Tuchel, and he's got to try and think of other ways to get more out of this group.
Yeah.
I'd agree, and that's what I was saying. Just a little word on Leeds. Just, again, probably at 2-2, Galhock came on and scored his first touch, 75 seconds on the ball. Probably thought they got a draw out of it, which is a good result going to Stamford Bridge. Just, again, can't quite get their consistency going. Bamford were
out again
with an injury, and I think one of the defenders was it Strauch or somebody who's out with an injury
right.
as well. So he's got a couple of key people. Yeah. Calvin Phillips was the other one, wasn't he?
Well, he's out for a little
few weeks.
They say
he could be out for a few weeks. Mm. So, again, another team who at the other end of the table just can't get that consistency. You just get a sense when they get all the players back, they'll be okay.
Yeah, I think they'll be okay. I mean, they're just having a fight. They're having a tough old season, and that's not, you know, unexpected in the second season. Okay, moving along to Liverpool Football Club. Mm. Stephen Gerrard, of course, the big story on this one. Big story for the weekend, really, going back. And it was pretty classy, I think, throughout the whole thing of going back and not really wanting to speak too much about it. He gets a really nice warm round of applause. I'm sure we all expected that. And, and I'm sure he would have appreciated it as well. But Liverpool get the job done. This was a penalty as well, wasn't it, on Mo Salah going through. Tyrone Mings, very clumsy in the back of him. And finished off from that point of view. Anything special to say about Liverpool right now? I think we agree that they are finding some pretty good form. This wasn't one of their best performances. Wasn't always fluid. But again, the most important thing at this point in time is the win and 3 points.
It was pretty much one-way traffic. Stephen Gerrard set his team up quite narrow, allowed Liverpool to have ball in the wider areas. Saw quite a lot of Trent, quite a lot of Robertson in advanced positions. You know, Mo Salah having those type of runs you all expect in that left, right-hand channel, taking shots. You're wondering, it, with about 60 minutes on the clock, they're kicking towards the cop and Salah puts one over the top and you start to think, just wonder if it's going to be one of those days. And then he gets a one-on-one situation. He drives with such direct running power and danger that I think sometimes defenders almost panic.
They feel they've got to do something.
Yeah,
because he can score from anywhere.
Tyrone Mings just dangles his leg out, makes a contact. It was a penalty. I know it's clumsy. I know there's not much challenge, but you catch him at full space, he's going to go down. Mm. There's no doubt he'll get he scores. I mean, it's a brilliant penalty, by the way. Just look at that, where it goes. 14 Premier League goals for him. You know, ridiculous amount of goals he's scoring in all competitions. It's another 1-0 win. It was 1-0 against Wolves last week. It's a 1-0 this week against Villa. They had a little bit of a scare about the Danny Ings. We'll maybe just chat about that in a minute and talk about Villa. But it's getting the job done. I kind of feel now, and I was thinking about, this is where we'll find out about this Liverpool team and this Man City team. Man City generally, around mid-December, kick on. You talked about the rotations. You've talked about the time. Last season, they went 21 games unbeaten all competitions. Pretty much won them the title. Mm. Liverpool did a similar thing when they won the title a couple of years ago. It's an interesting time with the Christmas coming up, the amount of games, and the thing we always have to keep going back to is the African Cup of Nations. They lose Jota, they lose Mane, they lose Salah. Liverpool have got to be intact. We'd love to be ahead by the time those two leave.
Jordan Henderson, Fabinho and Thiago, more minutes, more time for them. You know, going back to those clean sheets that they've got, that was a little bit of a concern, wasn't it, just a few weeks ago?
A bit sloppy with goals.
They look a little bit vulnerable at times. We know the front three are going to do their thing going forward. 45 goals, Rob, way more than anybody else so far. But defensively, they looked a little bit open. That's been improved.
Yeah.
And I do like, when everybody's fit, healthy, and at their best, Henderson, Fabinho and Thiago, because they're all a little bit different. Mm. Henderson's making these runs on the right-hand side, is a goal threat. Thiago is a player in certain games, will control the game because of that. And Fabinho is one of the best around defensive holding midfield players. But you're absolutely right. I think everybody's waiting for the winter. The African Cup of Nations, really, really, really informed key players in Liverpool will be out for at least two games.
Yeah, could be three could or be four,
quite,
possibly.
Could be quite more, depending on how their nation does in a tournament. So, no. Very well done. Penalty. Danny Ings goes through. Alisson has a little flap, a little wave at him.
Yeah. Not just enough for me. Didn't get an awful lot of the ball. I didn't think he got an awful lot of Ings. He might have brushed his... I just didn't think there was quite enough. I totally understand why Stephen Gerrard shouted. And I totally understand why Villa would be asking, you know, you gave one at the other end. You didn't give ours. I just didn't feel the contact was quite big enough. But listen, if it was a Liverpool player going down, if that's Mo Salah going there, and again, that's back to the question of, do referees take into account the football club and the person.
Yeah, and the atmosphere that's happening there. And the massive appeal at Anfield.
I mean,
for
if
that.
He'd have given the Danny Ings one, I don't think I wouldn't be complaining about it.
It wouldn't have got turned over. It wouldn't have got turned over.
So it was down to the referee now. Was he influenced by the time, the goal, the situation? If it was 3-0, might he give it to? Could only make it 3-1. I don't know. I don't know the only thing
being said on that, like we've just said earlier on, 5 minutes ago, the referees, let's make sure you're absolutely sure.
Yeah.
This referee, I haven't got his name, Stuart Atwell.
Yeah.
The first one, that's a definite.
Yeah.
Point to the spot,
yeah.
Well
he wasn't
done.
Sure.
And actually, this one, if he's not sure that Alisson really catches him, don't give it. He didn't give it.
But VAR must have checked and said it's not a clear and obvious error.
So I feel happier that way.
Yeah.
Then just blow into the spot and it not being overturned. But
just a little line on Steve, because he went back. He purposely played it down, very much his way. I thought the way he handles manager is absolutely media. Sorry, is spot on. His team, Rob, was it 3 wins in 4 games? Was it? Up until yesterday.
Yeah, they've lost against Liverpool and City now. The 2 games he's lost.
But odd goal losses.
Yeah.
Team are competitive.
Yeah.
Reasonably well set up.
Yeah.
With pretty much the same group of players that Dean Smith
had. A physical edge, I think, that's noticeable.
Physical edge.
And
he talked about that. Yeah, a bit of aggression, a bit of physical edge. We've got to add to a game. I'm liking what I see, Rob.
Yeah.
I'm liking what I see.
I am too. But we have to consider the honeymoon period of a new manager bump. And it's so exciting to have a legendary Premier League player as your manager. It's a brilliant club for them. Brilliant club.
Yeah.
There's money. You know, let's see how it goes, because we're going to learn more between now and the end of the season.
Correct.
But if he continues to go as he is and speak and carry himself the way that he does, of course the results are the most important part. But this could be the start of he should stay at Villa for 2 or 3 seasons.
Build a reputation.
Build a reputation, learn the job, learn all those different scenarios, the signings and the troubled players and the easy players and the results and the wins and the bastards, all the good, bad and the ugly of being a manager of this football club. That would have been great, a tremendous foundation when that time comes. You know, Frank Lampard didn't have that time and jumped into that job a little early. Yeah. I don't think Steven Gerrard will make the same decision to do it for Liverpool.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any 2 of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Let me take you from Anfield to Carrow Road, to Norwich, to Dean
that's
Smith.
Kind of different. Yeah, that's kind of different.
The former Aston Villa manager who's had an influence at his football club. I mean, it kind of felt to me with this game as though it was all about Ragnick, his second game, Cristiano Ronaldo going to Norwich, he hadn't scored there. You know, what's going to happen next about Manchester United? And I came away saying Dean Smith deserves some credit because he's made Norwich competitive. They're better set
up. They're so different.
They're different. They play more vertical. They get forward. They look like he's got players in his team, the best players in his team, playing in the positions they want to play. Poeta, I think, played on the left-hand side, and Josh Sargent on the right, gave problems to Manchester United. And I thought they deserved a lot of credit. I thought it was a bit disrespectful. It all felt like it was all Man United. And I was, I think he there's hope for Norwich when a month ago, I'm not so sure.
Absolutely
I would have even thought that. There's hope. They're competitive. They can be in with a chance between now and the end of the season. So credit Dean Smith for that. If you want to say anything more, or we can talk to United about the win, about the penalty, about the incidents in the game and what you saw from the shape. Who did you like? Who didn't you like?
Well, just quickly on that, Rob, just in terms of backup, I totally agree in terms of, I thought it was an excellent performance from them. They're only 3 points from safety, by the way, Rob.
Yeah.
Terrible goal difference, but 3 points from Watford in 17th spot. Shots, total shots for Norwich, 11 total, 5 on target. Man United, 12 shots, 5 on target. 53% possession United, really,
similar,
really close.
Yeah.
So that's where it comes from.
Yeah.
You know, what you see, what your eye tells you, the numbers kind of back up. Norwich are really, really good. Man United, bit disappointing. Bit disappointing, given the Crystal Palace performance and how it looked and how it felt and how the fans reacted to it. The media and the manager were so pleased about it. I was actually really disappointed. The same shape, the same team, Sancho and Fernando, Bruno Fernandes playing in that, and those wide roles that kind of roll in a little bit, this unusual system. I thought they looked tired, Rob. Yeah, I didn't see any high press. Yeah, I was expecting to see the really high press. It's Norwich, like, away from home. It's not, why wouldn't they go and do that? I thought they were compact and they're better without the ball, but not as good as I expected them to be. And also, by the way, that's without the ball. With the ball, Rob, I mean, they didn't play very well, in inverted commas, play. They didn't pass the ball very well. They didn't dominate the game very well. No, they haven't done that for a little while now. I just expected a bit more quality with the ball and more energy without it. Now, we did get a note.
Yeah.
Do we have to... Can we,
probably not.
No, we got a really, really well-informed resource saying that the team has been working physically very, very hard. Mm.
Yeah,
and it shouldn't really carry over to a game, Rob, where the players are a little tired. But I thought they looked a little leggy, and maybe that little shout from a friend of ours is maybe an insight into why they weren't as flipping at it as we expected.
And because of that, obviously, inside information we got, I just wonder, is, you know, Ralf Rangnick's coming to this football club, great experience across Europe. First time in the Premier League, might there be a recognition that you need to have your energy on a Saturday,
maybe.
And that maybe the balance of work
has got to be careful.
This is the Premier League. This is the intense league, and every team you play, whether it's Norwich at the bottom or Man City at the top, bring an intensity and athleticism. The second thing I just chuck at you, Rob, and it's a point I keep sort of saying, because I remember being a player, and you'll remember from your time at Middlesbrough, is wherever Manchester United go, it's the biggest game in town.
1,000,000%.
When Norwich, they go to Norwich, Norwich are going to play better. The fans are going to be up for it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if Ralf Rangnick has ever had that. Is it RB Leipzig? I'm not sure that happened. You know, was it Schalke? I'm not sure he's ever been, or does he understand that the club...
It wasn't at Bayern Munich, the giant, that maybe is the equivalent, where every other team raises their game,
correct.
Runs 50% more than what they
normally do. And he might just need to understand that as well, that everywhere he goes, everybody's going to be up for it.
Yeah. I mean, he should know that, Rob, shouldn't he?
He should, but
to experience,
I think sometimes
it.
To experience it is different, to see, to know, and even if, again, just sometimes...
Yeah, the bottom
I need to save some legs, because when I go to Burnley, when I play Watford, when I play, you know, Liverpool, whenever I play these teams, everybody's going to be up for it.
Also, by the way, I think the United fans should feel confident that, as an experienced coach, he will... conclude over a period of matches what this team needs,
and
he'll have a plan
things.
For it. He's assessing things. He'd probably say, "Wow, like whether he overworked him, possibly, but the football wasn't good, and the control wasn't good. Like 53, just almost the same possession as Norwich City.
Yeah.
When you're Man United, it will make him think, okay, those two in midfield, are they going to be? Are the fullbacks good enough on the ball? Are our front players?" Keeping the ball enough for us, so they done it. You know, he should have a plan and a strategy for whatever he sees over the coming weeks.
Big question for you then, and I'm glad we got here. Do you think he's a manager who will, with his plan, at the moment we've seen the 4-2-2-2. Do you think it's the 4-2-2-2 who fits that best, or do you think he looks and goes, the 4-2-2 doesn't suit Bruno? Not sure we get the best of Rashford and Sancho. Does he look at the system? What changes?
Really,
the personnel
really good
or,
question.
The system?
Really good question. I still believe, and I could be wrong, that he's not wedded, but I think he likes his systems, Rob. So he might continue. Again, I could be wrong here. He might continue to find the right bits for the right parts of the team. I like two up front. Most people like two up front. The extra numbers, the way that you occupy the defending players, the two number 10, so the wide players in a 4-4-2 that come in between the lines, he obviously likes that. Bruno Fernandes is smart enough, Rob, to make that work.
Yeah.
I think
it is. From the narrow left.
Jadon Sancho, I'm not quite so sure, because he seems to be more like an out-and-out winger that wants to take people. He doesn't have to come inside all the time.
Yeah.
So I think it's a really good
Rashford.
Question. I guess one of the front two is where he prefers to be, but I still believe that he's better in a 4-3-3 as a left forward. Yeah. So he can stay a little higher, there's three players behind him, and he can get half turned, he can see the field, he can make those brilliant runs in behind, use his speed. So great question. Mm. Because if a manager went in there and looked at the squad, I'm not sure they'd be saying that 4-2-2-2 is the way to go.
I don't think so. And I possibly would
Pogba.
Change.
Where does Pogba play in this?
Yeah, I don't think he's got the personnel, unless he's going to manipulate that. We talked about. I know there's talk about Martial, he might look at the window and a couple go out, a couple come in, I don't know.
Pogba, middle of midfield, where he is plays for France or whatever, instead of McTominay.
Yeah.
If you poke poor Pogba, if you're Ragnick,
Fred.
Come on, you've got to do some defensive side. You've got to press with the team. That would make them better on the ball. That would make their build-up play better. Yeah. It's just whether Pogba can be cajoled, persuaded, motivated to work without the ball alongside Fred, who will work his little socks off.
Did you see the line that Ragnick threw about Pogba? Like, it's not for us to want to be at this club. He has to sort of want... I don't think Ragnick's going to be one of those guys
so
who's going to go
great.
To...
Yeah, great, we'll let's see it.
I mean, I think apparently, by all accounts... reading in the press, he's told him to come back from Dubai, come and do your training back at Manchester United. I mean, you know, I don't know why you're over there.
No, I don't either. I mean, is it a modern day thing, Rob? When we were playing,
you
did your treatment. It's part of the process. You did it at the training ground with your physio and stuff. So, anyway, they did win with the Ronaldo penalty.
Yeah.
I mean, he just smashes the penalties, doesn't he? He strikes the ball so well. Like the last two penalties, like ping, like.
The biggest thing about him, he gets a penalty, he smashes it in. The biggest thing about him is as he runs over to the Norwich fans, everybody's getting the phone out. I can't quite believe
take a picture of it.
To take a picture of him. He's just scored against your team, lost his 3 points. And that's how big
he's a legend of
ever. And sometimes we forget that and what it means and the influence he has. But good clean sheet again for Manchester United.
Yes.
Two straight wins for Ragnick, which you want in the Premier League.
David De Gea was busy.
David De Gea was busy, the manager. They go to Brentford, my friend, on Tuesday.
Great test.
Looking forward to that one. Community Stadium, Brentford jumping. Not sure if Ivan Toney's going to be fit, but that's going to be an interesting one. Mm. Let's move it on, mate, to an Arsenal 3-0 win. We should be talking about Arteta and his team, but unfortunately, the big headline, the biggest headlines this weekend, was a disciplinary breach by Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. It was publicly outed by his manager, Mikel Arteta, was dropped from the squad. Arsenal went on to win the game. Then Arteta, after the game, said he didn't want to talk about Aubameyang at all. We spoke about it at length over on the show. We talked on the Boot Room. If people want to go and have a look at that, we had I wouldn't say differing views. We both understand. On reflection on the day, what we've heard, where we are, you seem to feel as though the manager doesn't need to come out with this. I believe that seems to be your strongest takeaway.
I don't believe that Mikel Arteta, assuming that he's a fan of Aubameyang and he feels there's a longer term, but he has got no requirement or need to try and get him out of the club. I don't think that he's handled these breaches very well. Mm. I didn't think it in the North London Derby, and a lot of people on social media say, you know, you shouldn't be bigger than the club and all this. I get that, but to be late because he's in traffic around that place and to be thrown on the bench in a COVID time where the camera's all on him, he looks fed up, humiliated in some ways.
Yeah.
And again, like, of course it's not okay to be late, and it's not okay to come back late from a trip that you should have been back. It's not great, but you can do it in different ways.
Mm.
You can punish a player in different ways. And maybe it suits him that he's not playing great, but if he's your top scorer, Rob, he's scored a goal every game, would he do the same thing? Would the players be happy of him sacrificing the best player because he did something wrong?
Yeah.
I know for a fact, if I was a player at that club and my top scorer was a bit of a nightmare, I'm not thrilled about it, but I worry about me and my performance, and I want him on the pitch. I want him to see scoring goals. So he's made it public. Mm. He's made it now. There's going to be a rift.
Yeah.
Whether he's lost the player, quite possibly. Mm. It's his captain. He's on huge money. He's on a new contract.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, you are throwing him out there to be criticised, and I got to be honest now, the most viewers and listeners will probably think, I'm assuming, you know what, he's done the right thing there. They won the game. Mm. He shouldn't get away with it. The young players will see him as an example, blah, 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 blah. Get that. Reality-wise, in my opinion, I want my best players on the pitch. And I think there's other ways to discipline and to speak to him, manage him, put your arm around him. If there's a better relationship in the first place, Rob, I'm sure Aubameyang's toeing the line. And finally, I'll bear down in a second. It's not as though there's a ton of history of him being a nightmare player. There was the lateness at Dortmund before he left the football club, maybe on his way out. But he's been a brilliant goal-scoring regular for many years now. And yet, in a nine-month period, Mikel Arteta's thrown him out there as if discipline breaches, you know, in this short period of time being under him. There's nothing under the previous manager, was there? He was captain under Unai Emery. So I question the way that he's been managed, handled by his coach at the football club, and it seems now everybody's talking about it, the newspapers, and you've probably lost your main striker in terms of his motivation to play for you. Don't like it.
I mean, in answer to your question and strong views, and I don't disagree with many of them, but what I would say is the one we're suggesting, or you're suggesting, and we did a graphic, there's one at Dortmund, there's been two at Manchester United now.
And probably a 15-16 year, I mean.
But there could have been others, Rob, that haven't been made public.
Right.
This could have happened 4 or 5 times before, and then Arteta's gone, you know what, this is the 6th time and this is enough. So I've just got to throw that out there to add balance to the argument. We don't know. As I looked at it, Rob, and I was thinking about it last night after we spoke about it and saw the scenes, I thought, let me put myself in both. Let me put myself as Aubameyang. I'm a bit of a maverick. I've scored goals. I'm a different guy. Look at my hair. Look at the way I dress. Look at my social media. Look at my car. I'm that guy. I'm that guy. Take me or leave me. That's who I am.
Right.
I believe so.
It's worked pretty well. It's
worked okay. Yeah. So that's as a player. I'd be thinking, hold on, listen. Now I've got to put myself in Arteta's position.
Right. Go on then.
As a manager. I've got this maverick, I'll put up with him, but this is the 3rd time now he's done, or the 4th or 5th time. I've kept it quiet times 4, 5 and 6, but this is times 7 or 8. I'm putting him out there.
Speak to me, though. Speak to him.
Yeah, speak to him, but I've spoke to him times 3, 4 and 5. Mikel, Pierre, I can't have this. You've got to come in time. I can't have this, but he keeps doing it. Let's just say. Mm. The second thing is, I've got a group that I'm working with that's got Ben White, that's got Gabriel, that's got Tavares, that's got Tomiyasu, that's got Smith Rowe, that's got Odegaard and Saka. All coming into my club, all trying to build a culture, all trying to grow as Arsenal players. And my biggest player, my captain, my highest earner, is continually falling out. If nothing else, I'm spending too much negative energy on him, and I've got others. Now, you said a really important thing, and I'll let you in here because I know you're ready to come back. You said as a player, if I'm playing and he's my thing, I want him in my team, right? Okay. I'm saying to you, I'm the manager. I'm not just worried about you. I've got to worry about 11 here, and then the other 10 who are not involved. Some of them, like Nketiah, might be knocking on my door and saying, I train every day, I'm on time, okay, I'm a kid, but he doesn't even come in. He breaks a COVID protocol and you're still playing him. So Mikel Arteta has many other people and views to think of, not just me as a player. Me as a midfield player, I'd put up with it, Rob.
Does it influence that Mesut Ozil was on a fortune of a contract, got opportunities, and fell out finally with Mikel Arteta, and they end up getting him out of the football club?
Yeah.
Is this a road that they are looking to go? We'll try and move on and talk briefly about the game because they played really well. Do you think Arteta is looking to move him out?
I think he's pushed. To announce it before the game, he could easily have said he's injured.
He's not fit. Late from travel, COVID issue, he's not available.
Or there's a lot of things. There's loads of ways he could have. He wanted it out there.
Right.
After the game, he didn't want to discuss it. He wasn't saying anything.
Because it was already out there.
He wasn't going. Yeah, he's done what he wanted. Why has he put it out there? I think he wants the people to know. He wants the staff to know. He sent a message. This guy's going to be available to go in January. He'll be gone. Talk about the football, my friend, because you were watching this game.
The team played pretty well.
Wow, what a goal, the first goal. Lacazette goal, I mean. That's all what Arteta wants, isn't it?
Well, that's it right there. And we saw the knee slide celebration, maybe a little bit extreme, but so what, from Aaron Ramsdale, because There was many other times before this where, like the fans are like, let's playing get it long.
Yeah.
And he tried to play out, and he continued to play out, and this goal came from him playing out under pressure. Mm. You know, bump, 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 played all the way through. The cross comes in from Saka, and it's a really good finish. That, in a nutshell, is what Arteta wants.
Yeah.
Doesn't always work. I'm sure some statistician will work out how many times they've given away this conceded goals,
yeah.
How many times it's worked and benefited. But that was really, really good. Odegaard, I thought, goal was interesting because Arteta had said before the game, we've got to get more crosses in the box, we've got to get more players in the box looking to score goals.
Yeah.
And that's why that goal, I'm like, oh, there it is. Two wide players, I think it was a full-back across the ball, wasn't it? Kieran Tierney that headed it back across.
Yeah.
Martin Odegaard, the number 10, and most number 10s, particularly of a decade ago, would be around the edge of the box. He ran into a centre-forward position and he heads the ball in first. So that was good in a different way. Mm. And I think Arteta will be pleased with that. And Odegaard's, I think it's a couple of goals. Is it three goals on a spin?
Three on the bounce.
Three on a spin.
Yeah.
From a number 10?
Yeah.
That's a modern-day number 10. Really, really good. Gabriel, centre-back, attacks the ball really well. Good defender. There's a good foundation at Arsenal, Rob, and there's going to be issues. The star player issues or weak performances issues. We saw against Everton where they were overwhelmed by Everton a little bit, which is disappointing.
Yeah.
They've got to get some steel. You know, they'll try and add a little bit of quality now and again. But this was a good Arsenal performance against Southampton team that was one of those. It's one of those.
Yeah.
They're Jekyll and Hyde. They can be really good and impressive. And we say things like, I remember saying things like 2 or 3 weeks ago, good manager. Good performance. They're tough to play against. High press. Today, awful. Yeah. In this game,
bit of a worry,
it was that side of things.
They're in the wrong diver.
They are. They're a bang in trouble. But a good win. Good performance.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Let's move it to the KP Stadium. It was a difficult week for Leicester. Got knocked out of the Europa League. A little bit of pressure on Brendan Rodgers, conceding goals. I think 13 goals conceded from set pieces. A bit of question mark about, has he lost a bit of edge? Has he still been able to do it with the players? Against a Newcastle team that were bullied by a win for Eddie Howe. First win in 15 games. We saw a great Eddie Howe kind of little piece before the match. He talks about how he's managing career started and how, you know, he worked at Bournemouth and then he's ready to go here again at Newcastle. And we're talking about this one's like a real game in the balance. You know, Newcastle could you know, go well and nick some points here. Not how it turned out, my friend.
No, this was really important for Brendan Rodgers and for Leicester City. I think you looked at the lineup and you're starting to see players come back into form. Johnny Evans, unfortunately for him, is an important defender, but went off with a with this hold in the back of his leg. It looked like a hamstring injury. Harvey Barnes is in good form. Yuri Tillemans is back in the side. Some of their football is really, really good. Patson Daka, again, people watching, listening to this, maybe don't know too much about him. I think Brendan Rodgers has been really careful. He's been used a lot in European football and got a good goal scoring record. He started the game. Jamie Vardy's got 9 Premier League goals on the bench. Daka looks good.
Mm.
Looks good. And that front three, wasn't it? It was Daka, it was Maddison,
Bonds.
And it was Harvey Barnes that did some good work.
Energetic.
And played really, really well. So, really important victory for them. I am going to go and talk about my underappreciated player on the back of all that. James Maddison. Not been in good form.
Mm.
Off-field issues and problems.
Correct.
Harsh treatment by his manager. Sat his backside on the bench for many games where we're saying, surely in the best Leicester team, James Maddison's got to be in it.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying that's underappreciated, but when you see him back, playing at his best, little clever little 1-2s, takes his goal, was it the fourth goal?
Fourth goal.
He's back at his best, and I think it's a time to appreciate James Maddison when he's at his best because he's a player that I think is a little diamond of a player, Rob, and he's lost his way with the national team on the back of his form and his problems for Leicester City. So I just wanted to give a little nod to James Maddison that he's a top talent, and you see him play like he did against Newcastle, and that kind of strikes home a little bit. So James Maddison gets my underappreciated performer of the weekend.
I'm giving you 90% approval rate on that. There's a 10% query with James Maddison on the winning of the first penalty against Jamal Lascelles.
Fair point.
I thought Lascelles planted his foot and Maddison made contact and flew onto the foot. And I was a little bit disappointed in Maddison because he's had one of those in the past before and I just thought that slightly took away.
Was it a Vardy-like?
It was a very
hang of the leg.
Yeah, let me hang this one out and go over. He got the first penalty. Tielemans took it, and then after that, he did take it.
Quickly on Newcastle United. It's going to be all or nothing. It's going to be all or nothing. They're going to attack. It's an attacking lineup. They're going to try and play flamboyantly, attacking wise, out of trouble. I'm not sure we've seen anybody.
Are they good enough to do that?
Well, I think the front players are, but when they look behind and they see what's going on back there, there's a problem. Now, Eddie Howe might... It's not a blind spot. He must know where their weaknesses are, but he's not playing to that weakness. We're going to trust our ability to play. We've got midfield players and Willock and Shelby that can play. We've got front players that can score goals. They've got to bring in... And he said it. He said that the transfer window is going to be key, which we've said a while now. He needs a centre-back, at least one centre-back, maybe two centre-backs, maybe a full-back. He needs to get a whole new defensive... A new part of the team to give them a chance to stand up because they're still obviously banging trouble.
Bob, a 4-0 defeat when you're in their position is damaging. It means you've got to get back on that training and start again. The next four games: Liverpool, Man City, Man United, Everton.
Oh, blimey.
The next four games. I mean, it could be on for Eddie. He may have to adjust.
He won't.
We'll move on. Burnley 0, West Ham 0. Burnley started the game well, imposed themselves on the match in the first half, and I thought gave a decent account of themselves. Probably showed why Burnley are where they are. I think back four midfield, you know what you're going to get. You get a certain amount of service, you get a certain amount of discipline, organisation. You can see the coaching structure. They lack a bit of creativity up front. Maxwell Cornet didn't play. Chris Woods played, got a decent record against West Ham. He kind of, as ever, will battle away, had a couple of chances, will make it difficult for defenders. Jay Rodriguez not got a particularly good goal-scoring record. And I thought it highlighted why Burnley are where they are. They're the opposite of Newcastle. They've got structure and a way that they can defend, just can't find goals at the top end of the pitch.
They're boring. They've become boring now. Why
would I say they're not boring? Because the Premier League is made up. What I love is the diversity and the difference of what the Premier League... And that's different. Going to Turf Moor, with the wind, with the environment, with the old stadium, with the way they play, is a unique challenge.
Who's
in the
enjoying
Premier
that, then, right now?
The Burnley
are
fans.
They?
The Burnley
are they enjoying
fans,
nil-nil?
The Burnley fans who stay,
one
the,
win all
who
season?
Stay in the Premier League longer than teams like Villa did and had times out, and Sheffield Wednesday did, and Sunderland did, and Notts Forest did, and all these great teams.
Don't they want to see a bit more attacking football? Well, they want to see a few more players in the box.
I think you're being harsh there. They, at times they played better football. I remember they won 3-1 one of the games recently and scored a couple of brilliant goals.
Yeah, they did. That's just, they're so few and far between.
I think what stands this club in good stead is... The fans appreciate and understand where they are, who they are, and what they get. The manager does the same. I heard Tarkowski come out the other day, and I thought it was brilliant. He said, "You know who we are. We're an experienced group. We won't panic, and we'll do what we do, and we've got the processes to stay up."
Mm. Yeah, they have. I watched them today, and I'm like, they just don't look like scoring. I never sit there thinking, wow, they're going to score in a minute, or they go close a few times, or the goalkeeper's got to have a man-of-the-match performance against them. It's very, very structured, Rob. Mm. Left side, Charlie or Dwight McNeil crosses. Two strikers in the box. Midfield players behind the ball. Other guy further on the right-hand side.
That's been enough to keep you in the
league.
Yes,
it has.
Maybe Eddie Howe might need a little bit of that.
Maybe. David Moyes said an interesting thing before the game. The Premier League is harder this season, and he was worried about a drop-off from his team. He said, "I thought we might drop off. We've got better." Yeah. But it's a harder division this year. Maybe that's why Burnley... are finding it harder to get the results and their tactics to win over teams and to get the points required. I mean, of course, they're well in touch with many teams ahead of them.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I got to see more from Sean Dyche. But you're probably right. They won't change anything. They're grinding like there's never been grinding before in the Premier League and trying to find their way through points picked up in most games. Another
draw. West Ham, I think you were disappointed first half.
First half disappointed. Much better.
Declan Rice started to influence the game.
Yeah, much
better.
They
had more quality and probably a bit disappointed they probably didn't.
Yeah, I thought they were much better. I enjoyed them second half. Didn't enjoy them first half. You know, you want to see that. They're a team now that we're putting in a whole different echelon in this Premier League, and I didn't feel it. Scrappy, kind of similar in the first half. Second half was better. The only kind of little concern is Mikel Antonio, Rob. Quiet, not as lively, not as dominant, not affecting the game as much.
He's not a centre-forward, though, Rob, really.
Well, he's picked up the number nine shirt.
We
don't say that when he holds the ball up well and he scores goals.
He does, because I say he does a great job, but he's not a bona fide centre-forward. He's not... He's playing in that position, but I think these times...
He's a good centre-forward, Rob. He's a good, very, very good centre-forward.
But he's not... He's different. He's not Vardy, is he?
No, he's not one of those.
He's not that.
He's blimmin' good at other things.
Yeah, he is. So you play to those strengths. But you've got to remember, they sold Sebastian Allaire. Mikel Antonio was in the team there, playing from the left-hand side, or playing in the 10 underneath that guy. And he can still have that effect. So unless at West Ham have not really replaced Allaire. They've had that money and decided to go in other ways.
They've decided to put him up front, and they've got goals from all the other players underneath, though. Bowen
and that works.
And Benrahma.
Well, that's why Antonio is not... Is not a.
Fornals has got goals. Others have got goals.
What's the word? Like,
he's not traditional number nine.
Traditional striker. So sometimes I think he takes up strange positions. Sometimes I think I only remember that a couple of times as an attacking midfield player, and the manager said to me, "Go on, go up front and that, or play a game." I hated it, even though I had chances, because it's not really where I'm, especially when things aren't going well.
I'm surprised that you feel as strong as that. I like him up there. He's embraced it. He's going through a quiet patch, but maybe you're right. Maybe he's comfortable. I mean, he's played all over the place.
Yeah.
Maybe he enjoys being the versatile guy.
Yeah.
There isn't many of them around, but plays right wing back and left back and different spots.
Because they haven't got too many who could play in that position other than him, have they? If you look at that squad, who else could play central striker?
Yeah. Well, Jared Bowen goes up there, I think, when he's not available.
No.
They had a whole different back four, really,
today
from what they've been playing. So the squad is good. But, yeah, just dropped off a little bit, West Ham, and that was a winnable game for me. I know that Burnley's difficult, but I thought they wasted the first half a little bit.
I think just in summary, and again, when we were doing our notes on the game, top of the Europa League, in the quarterfinals of the League Cup, fourth in the table, however
brilliant.
Many points
is it
now, 28 points. I mean,
after 16 games,
Well done, David Moyes. Yep. Well done, David Moyes. Crystal Palace, well done, Patrick Vieira, man. Because this was a game, Rob, I think we were talking about maybe Leicester and Newcastle, an important game for both teams. Kind of felt this one was. Palace off the back of three straight defeats. Everton off the back of necessary emergency win with a late goal by Damari Gray that changed the outlook at that football club. Palace go ahead, go on and win this game 3-1 and deserved it.
Deserved it. Better team. Palace, under the lights, evening game, fans up for it. New kind of excitement around the club. And new excitement and justified excitement. And maybe this guy should have got underappreciated.
Conor Gallagher. I don't think he's underappreciated, though, is he?
No. Well, he shouldn't
he won't
be anymore.
He won't be anymore.
He won't be anymore. I mean, Conor Gallagher's quality, physical attributes, technical ability, tactical ability, mental stuff, toughness to be able to be outstanding in a struggling West Brom team. And this isn't a struggling Palace side, but it's a Palace team that's not easy to be outstanding. He's doing it consistently, Rob. Special player. We talked about whether he would go back to Chelsea in January.
Is he underappreciated by Chelsea?
I don't know, because they might think, they might love him to bits and think, you know what, it's probably still best for him to get Premier League minutes somewhere else.
Yeah. They've done it with Gilmore, haven't they? Gilmore's similar at Norwich.
So that's tough to know the correct answer, but he's going to go back at some point. It's just, I think he has to have a clause in his contract to be released in January. Otherwise, it's a season-long loan.
I think Bex asked you a question. I thought it was a brilliant question. Now I want to put it on the page. If you were him, what would you do?
I would be loving where I'm at right now, but I would love to be part of this Chelsea team, Rob.
And you go back.
If I had the option to go back in January, and I got some assurances that I weren't going to be just sitting on the bench.
Yeah.
Well, that's tough to assure,
yeah, what's that to assure in the Chelsea team?
So, in reality,
Lukaku doesn't get assurance. I'd stay. I'd continue. It's a bit like Lingard, we talked about West Ham. And yeah. I'd stay. I'd score goals. I'd get 12 to 15 goals. And I'd go back in the summer and go, I think my hand's strengthened more by playing and scoring and people seeing me and people talking about me.
Yeah, great point. But he's a big asset. Yeah. Everton, Rafa Benitez, blimey.
Rafael.
Talk about from swinging from one to another where the performance level is so different. That excellent victory, late winner of Damari Gray against Norwich, against Arsenal,
on Monday. On Monday.
And such a limp, passive, cautious, defensive setup against a team that had lost three Premier League games on the spin. Yeah. And they started to play on the 70th minute, Robbie, where they got a bit physical and aggressive.
They made subs, by the way.
Yeah, I said before the game, Everton at their best, even this Everton team, playing flat out.
Yeah.
They've got to be flat out, going for it, physical, aggressive, front foot, move the ball quickly, everything quick and aggressive. They were the total opposite, and that's why I said it, because they can't sit back and be that team. They're not good enough. They make mistakes. Yeah. So if you sit back deep, hoping that your defenders are going to be solid and sound, and Rafa's teams in the past may have been, this isn't. They aren't. They make mistakes, and I feel a little bit for Damari Gray because it was a bad touch. How bad were they? And where they are on the league table right now, they're 14th spot. I mean, Brighton, Brentford,
18 points in,
Palace,
I mean, they're seven points above the Relo. I think it's interesting because we've all got, I know you, I've got a number of Everton
friends
who watch this club and love their... every fan loves it. They love their football club. Yeah. And they know the history and what they used to win in the Kendall era and how that was in the Joe Royal era, in the Moyes era.
And then
they've come now, Rob, and they... I just think they're a bit disappointed in the group. I'll tell you what I think hurts, and one of my friends had texted me a couple of things today, is that when their back was against the wall on Monday, they found a performance.
Yeah, they do. They found spirit. And
then you come today, and that's a bad look on their football club. That's not who Everton are. Or when we really... Everton should be flat out. They'll lose some games. They'll win some games. They'll draw some games. But give us everything.
Is Rafa demanding everything?
Well, that's what I don't know. It's a bad look on the players, and it's a bad look. It's a bad look. Let's get to Rafa, because I thought it was interesting. And directors who do football matches always have a sense of the story. And I thought he did a brilliant thing today, the director, whoever he was, doing the feed of the game. Charleston came off just near the 80, 70-odd minutes, sat down, mumbling, not happy. The director took a shot of Charleston, a shot of Rafa, and then they shot... went up to the director's bot and took a shot of Ben Kenrat. And guess that's storytelling. That's saying, star centre forward, doesn't play, comes off disgruntled, not happy with the manager, muttering to the other things. Manager's sitting there looking a little bit into thing like, I don't care what's going on behind me, he didn't play. The owner upstairs, who hires and fires, might have a decision to make. Let me just put this out and I want to know where you feel with it. Whether we don't know what Rafa's doing in terms of motivation. They didn't turn up today. They had a spell for 20 minutes and could have maybe nicked something if Gordon maybe squares on or whatever. Yeah. But they didn't deserve it, to be honest, Rob. And the Gallagher goals were good. Rafa has fell out with Digne. Don't know what that's about, but it's fell out, obviously.
Reports.
Yeah, he's not playing him, and he kind of alluded to it today. He's happy and quite rightly, I thought, pulled off for Charlton because he wasn't good today. Fell out with him. Is it a rocky road for a manager to fall out with big-time players, who some of your better players, who can be different makers, who when we're talking about, you know, is he motivating, what's he doing? A lot of money's been spent on this football club. Ultimately, Marcel Brand has gone.
Yeah, so he has more responsibility, more pressure.
Yeah, correct.
And they've gone from a director of football that's the idea is that it kind of they sign players that suits the club and the philosophy from the board. That's the idea. Then different coaches come in to coach those players to a situation where I forget that. Rafa, all right, on you go. You decide who comes in. And that's in the old school. So he now is in charge of players. If it doesn't work out for him, we know he will go. Yeah. And the next coach comes in, well, they're Rafa Benitez's players. I don't like this. So they've decided to go back down that road, which...
Yeah.
Stick to a structure, maybe get a different director of football. Anyway, bottom line is, and all the fans want to know and see is good football,
yeah.
winning football. Let's finish it with a question, Rob. What's acceptable today, this
for,
season?
For Everton. Yeah.
They're in 14th spot right now. Mm-hmm. If they finish the Premier League season in 14th position,
yeah.
is Rafa Benitez under pressure for his job yeah. in the yeah. summer?
Finished 10th last season, I think 59 points. I don't think they would expect... Also because, Rob, teams like Brighton, teams like Brentford, teams like...
Palace,
let's say, will be above them. West Ham United, who they would, I think, start to feel that they should be similar
yeah.
to,
yeah.
will be way above them. I think that reflects badly, and I think it will put big pressure on Rafa.
Mm. Yeah, me too. All right, mate, is this the last game we're
looking at? Last game we're looking at is at the Community Stadium. It was the Friday game. I was looking on this one, Brentford versus Watford. Another game which was important for both these teams. A win for Brentford sort of gets them somewhere mid-table and all of a sudden start to feel a lot happier with life. They won the game and went to 10th. For Watford, a game where you're thinking, oh, is Ranieri getting things right? He was, what, six defeats, two wins in his eight games that he's taken on so far. So an important game for Watford. And Watford went 1-0 up in the game. But as the game was playing, I was working with Danny and Paul Burmaster, who was hosting it. Yep. And with about 20 minutes to go, I said, they don't know what to do.
No.
They're going back, they're sitting there, and they really don't know what to do.
I just love the energy that Brentford have.
Yeah.
And they're behind. They were hammering away, Rob. They looked a better team. They forced their way back into this game. Mm. And when they get the equalising goal, I'm like, they're going to go on and win this game. The energy they've got at the Community Stadium there, what's the capacity there, Rob? Something like 13?
It's a bit more. I think something like 17,000, 18,000.
Something like that.
Less than 20,000 people.
To generate some energy in there.
Yeah.
And Man United go there, I think, on Tuesday
yeah.
which is really interesting. Mm. I think Ranieri is under pressure. Crazy as that sounds. I think he's probably got two or three more games, Robbie Earl. And if there's no victory, they'll look to change. Absolutely
really?
Look to change. It won't matter about the window because they'll do their thing in the window.
Yeah.
The coach just gets no say in the players that come into this club.
Mm.
They coach the players that they give. Here you go. Yeah. Here's our group. We're going to bring in him and him and him. You go and coach them. In the next two or three, if they don't, it's like they want to see the team going in the right direction. And they did this early call against, what was his name? Munoz.
Yeah.
A very early call saying, team's not playing right. So we're going in the wrong direction. Well, there hasn't been a change.
Yeah.
I thought it was a scandalous decision at the time. And now it'll be the same thing. Ranieri, sorry. Like, you've had, six, seven, eight games?
He's had eight games now. Seven
defeats,
two
wins. So we
don't
think we're going in the right direction.
Man United,
we're going to go with
somebody
else. They'll get somebody else in.
And the thing I said, which I looked at the Watford team is, they've got the hardest thing you need. They've got goal scorers in that team.
Yeah.
Sara's injured but comes back. Hernandez can play on one side. Dennis and King. That four is enough to get you the goals. Organise a back line.
Well, same as Newcastle.
Cathcart, Schuster-Kahn.
Isn't it amazing how teams have to be kind of balanced and complete or you're going to struggle? You can have great forwards, poor defenders. Mm. The whole thing, bringing it together, is very difficult.
Yeah.
Very difficult.
Well, Ranieri, he's got the personality, he's got the profile. He's got to get some points now, mate, on the board to give Watford a chance. Listen, mate, we're going to wrap it up there. Another great week of action. I don't know if it's coincidence or not, but it's a weekend when all the big boys got penalty decisions, happened to win the games at the bottom. Watford, Norwich and Newcastle, they all lost, while Burnley, they grabbed an important point. We'll be going to be back on Thursday, December the 16th, when we review the Champions League draw that comes out on Monday. And then we'll look back at match week 17. Real glut of games coming up as we start the festive fixes. But for now, I'm Earl. He's Musty, together with the two Robbies. Thanks for watching and listening. Be safe and stay healthy. It's a good night from me.
And it's good night from him.
Good night.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.